Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're taking a look at the Eurozone economy. Uncertainty and instability have long been the watchwords, but recent data suggests that the bloc has enjoyed close to best in a decade performance in the past year, with growth bettering even the United States, and with concerns about crisis, even breakup, seemingly averted. Our panel today will unpack the numbers and, as ever, assess what all this means for investors, businesses and analysts alike. We start with Paul Donovan, Global Chief Economist at UBS Wealth Management. Paul, uncertainty's gripped the Eurozone economy for such a long time. Here we are, we're seeing the best growth in a decade. What's going on?
Well, essentially, we have normalized. A lot of the problems with European growth surrounded the financial system and uncertainties about banking. Banks weren't prepared to support the economy through credit. And over the last few years, the banks have, by and large, sorted themselves out. They are providing support to the economy, and that's enabled things to pick up somewhat.
Ricardo Garcia is head of European macroeconomics in the UBS Wealth Management CIO in Zurich. Ricardo Garcia, we've talked before about uncertainty around the Eurozone economy, and for a long time that's been the story. But here we are, the best growth, what, in a decade or so? What's going on exactly?
Well, if we take a step back to last year, we had a huge electoral cycle, and skepticism towards the Eurozone was pretty high, you know, given all these threats, you know, for example, in the French elections or in the Netherlands. And so investors were also holding back at the beginning of the year. After these elections, it turned out that actually things are not as bad in the Eurozone. At the same time, you had the ECB moving towards the exit as inflation normalized following the recovery of oil prices. And both of these factors have triggered a change in optimism towards the Eurozone, which can also be seen in the market expectations for growth here.
I'd like to put that question to you too, Ewan Potts from Bloomberg.
Well, we started 2018 on a real note of optimism. For the first time since the Great Recession, all the engines of global growth are now firing. And it's been Europe that's really been the laggard for many years, as America's done okay, Asia has did okay. Europe has really been the laggard. Now, Europe has been through an awful lot of stuff. Of course, Spain and the UK have very big banking sectors, very big exposure to property. So they were incredibly hard hit during the Great Recession. But finally, there is growth right across the Eurozone, Germany, France, even Southern Europe, all joining in the growth story. But before we get too carried away about the strength of Europe's economies, remember that unemployment is still more than 16% in Spain. It's still over 20% in Greece. Even in France, one of the more prosperous parts of the Eurozone, unemployment is more than 9%. And remember that in the US, unemployment never went above 10% during the depths of the Great Recession. So that just shows just how far behind Europe is.
If indeed we are seeing the end of existential doubts about the euro, thinking back to the Greek bailout, the travails of Ireland, Portugal and so on, why so? Paul Donovan, what's driving this big uptick in confidence?
Well, I think the question about the existence of the euro hasn't necessarily gone away entirely. I mean, if there is another crisis in the future, it may come back. But I think the credibility of a threat to the existence of the euro has declined. What happened, of course, was that in the depths of the crisis, we didn't see countries leave. We did see a concerted political effort to keep the euro together. And that has, I think, reinforced in the minds of investors the determination of European politicians to keep the euro as a single entity. And now that you're getting an economic recovery, the pressure, the urgency around issues like debt has faded somewhat, and with that, questions about the continuity of the euro.
Ricardo Garcia, allowing for the fact that, as Paul says, that existential question is not perhaps gone entirely, if we look back at the significant euro crisis points to Greece or Ireland or Portugal, why the changes that we have seen? What's driving renewed confidence?
I mean, obviously, a change to high growth changes a lot of things. Also, confidence increases. But at the same time, you know, people neglect often that a lot of work has been done by those governments. You've mentioned Greece, Ireland, all the program countries. If you look, for example, at the imbalances at the current account level have corrected massively. You know, for example, if you look at the Spanish fiscal deficit, they've come down from over 10%. They're moving now towards 3% next year. And they are, together with France, most likely the last countries in the excessive deficit procedure from the European Commission. So all of the member states next year are expected to comply with the Maastricht criterion in the fiscal deficit. So there has been a huge change and a lot of work done, and growth is helping obviously as well. No? So all the bits and pieces are falling into place.
Ewan Potts, if I can ask you too about the end of these existential doubts, if you like. Could that narrative return? Of course, we've had Brexit too, albeit that's without the Eurozone itself, but that hasn't seemed to destabilise the wider EU bloc that much either. So, Ewan, what's your take?
It's strange. You would think that Brexit would have led to an existential crisis, one of the biggest economies in Europe leaving the EU, the first time that any country of any note has left the European Union. But in fact, it actually seems to have, in some ways, moved countries closer. And there is certainly talk from Macron that there could be closer integration. And it seems that the European project is coming together. I wonder if part of that's because of the renewed economic self-confidence in the euro area. Of course, a couple of years ago, Britain was doing much better than the euro area countries. Now that position is reversed in economic terms. So interestingly, the what could have been a political crisis seems to be pushing countries together in Europe. But how long that will last, it's difficult to say. Those questions about the future of Europe have never really gone away.
Looking further ahead, Paul Donovan, I wanted to ask you whether potentially less or a lessening of stimulus threatens this sort of euro serenity.
So the euro as a currency has been supported in the foreign exchange markets, although I would argue that a lot of the euro's recent strength is really reflecting weakness of the dollar rather than strength of the euro. The euro was at a very weak point in late 2016. It was frankly glaringly obvious that the euro was going to bounce back from that point. It was a long way from fundamental fair value, and the economics just didn't justify it. So we've seen a move recently, which is, I think, not really a particular comment on the euro or even on the euro economy, but more a comment on the growing problems of financing a US current account deficit compared to a moderate Eurozone current account surplus and no reason to sell the euro, which is, of course, something which does tend to help support the currency.
Ricardo Garcia, that point to you too. Could less stimulus threaten the prevailing winds we're seeing?
You know, as the ECB withdraws stimulus, and we're talking here just about monetary stimulus because there is no fiscal stimulus at the Eurozone level, it implies a higher euro and higher interest rates. I think that's quite intuitive. You know, a strong economy usually means also higher interest rates and a higher exchange rate. And these by textbook obviously are a drag. At the same time, economic growth is a result of a lot of drivers. So we have to look also at the other drivers, and there are good news, right? We have increased, for example, our global growth forecasts this week. We have now 4.1% growth at the global level, 2018, so this is this year, which will be the highest growth rate since 2011. So this obviously helps to offset the drag from a high euro. And the other effect is also as interest rates increase, people start to implement pent-up projects. Take, for example, an average household that is renting its place and thinking about building a home or buying a home in the near future. Now that they see that the ECB is moving towards higher interest rates and that the market interest rates are increasing, they're now thinking more seriously about buying or building a home, which helps the construction sector, you know, which is also very important for the economy.
Ricardo Garcia. Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look in more detail at politics and how that shapes the space. So next on the programme, what of political risk? Have we really got over the populist wave, or does it still represent a threat? Well, the narrative to watch is much more about anti-politics rather than populism, according to Paul Donovan.
I think what I would refer to as anti-politics, the politics of being opposed to something, is still going to continue to be a feature across Europe. It will ebb and flow, but the fundamental economic causes of this, increased uncertainty, disruption coming through from technology, job insecurity, an understanding of the degree of income inequality. None of these things are changing, and in fact, several of these things are only going to get worse in the years ahead. So the fundamental drivers of anti-politics, I think, are still there. When it comes to the financial markets, however, we should remember that domestic investors tend to react fairly calmly to political risk because they understand it better. Foreign investors tend not to understand political risk very well, and as a result, they tend to overreact when we have episodes of political risk. Now, this is important because the European financial markets have quite a high instance of domestic ownership. And that means that the European financial markets, as we saw around the French elections, and as I suspect we will see around the Italian elections, are a lot less likely to overreact to political noise. Unlike, for example, the United States, where foreign investors play quite a significant role, particularly in the dollar, of course, and perhaps do tend to overreact when political events come up.
And what else is on the horizon politically, in your view, Ricardo Garcia?
Next on the watch is all the Italian elections taking place on the 4th of March. But here also concerns have deflated as parties like the Five Star Movement have distanced themselves from claims or plans to do a referendum on the euro. So this has become much more of a normal election, and the market will focus also more on who will be part of the coalition. But as I said, concerns have deflated there as well, given that populist parties have become a bit more mainstream and have distanced themselves from a referendum on the euro. So again, good news there.
Talking political risk, Ewan Potts, was the threat of those populist movements, albeit diminished to an extent now, one of the things previously causing jitters in the Eurozone economy?
Well, there have been a couple of years of big elections in Europe, and this is a real risk factor for markets. We had the rise of the far right in France. Marine Le Pen had a chance of entering the Elysee Palace. In the Netherlands, there was also a risk from the far right. And of course, we've had elections in Germany. But all these things have passed off either with the result which the markets wanted, or in the case of Germany, it's been a little bit slow, but the confidence that things will work out in the end. And indeed, even Brexit seems to have a silver lining in terms of bringing Europe together. So we've got through a lot of these things, and we seem to be able to focus on the economics now. We do have an election coming up in Italy, which looks fairly uncertain, but then that's nothing new.
Finally on the programme, let's look in a little more detail, perhaps, at the ECB itself and Mario Draghi and assess their performance. Ewan, how would you gauge their management of this? Is it a good job, pretty well done in broad terms?
Well, certainly the economic numbers will back up Mario Draghi in his case for having done a good job at the ECB. In a way, Mario Draghi as a central banker is quite lucky that the inflation numbers have been kind to him. Of course, around the world, inflation has been under control in recent years. Indeed, the worries about inflation being too low. But at the moment, Mario Draghi has been able to keep his foot on the monetary pedal. We still have negative interest rates. We still have a bond buying program in Europe, despite the economic growth, because inflation really hasn't budged anywhere. In fact, he's trying to actually get it higher. He's below his target. But at the moment, his economic strategy seems to have been working out pretty nicely. It's taken a long time to get here, though, of course. We've had years of Europe having very, very sluggish growth, and those unemployment numbers still really need to be lowered across much of Europe.
If we look back to what Mario Draghi had to say towards the end of January, he suggested that there are still potential triggers to prompt a rethink of ECB monetary strategy. I wonder, Ricardo Garcia, in your view, what could those triggers look like?
Mario Draghi split these risks into two broad pockets. One were generally global risks, and we're thinking, for example, about the Chinese deceleration, which so far is going relatively smoothly, but also the Brexit negotiations. And then the other bucket is basically the exchange rate, which has been included now again into the list of the risks. No? So looking at these, probably right now, the bigger concern is the exchange rate, not because the euro-dollar has increased to 125-ish as of, if I look at the Bloomberg screen right now, but because of the potential it has to run further, right? So usually trends have, they are quite persistent. and the ECB is still moving towards the exit of the QE program, which should imply an even higher euro. That's why we are expecting 130 for the euro dollar towards the end of the year. And this is certainly a risk, and this is what I meant before. Certainly these are drags to growth, these risks, but at the same time you have also other drivers which are supportive of growth.
And that's Ricardo Garcia bringing us to the end of this 174th edition of the Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance each week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via your preferred podcast platform. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.